At least I should have bothered him just once.
Humans form communities.
And from that diversity comes strength.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy!
The year is 2024.
The name of the podcast, Babylon 5.
For the first time.
Welcome to Babylon 5 for the first time, not a Star Trek podcast. My name is Jeff Aiken, and I am the one who was. And we're watching Babylon 5 for the first time for you, the one who is. It's a great shtick, Brent, but if the people are listening on the audio version, they're not gonna get it.
Well, but Penn and Teller were in this episode, and you're doing the Penn thing, I'm doing the Teller thing. I mean, you know.
It's a lot of fun on YouTube.
Oh, man. Oh, hey, guys. Welcome to the show. Jeff and I are two veteran Star Trek podcasters who are searching for the important messages that Babylon 5 is delivering in its own unique way.
Now, we're looking for those Babylon 5 messages, not Star Trek messages. Because we're not looking for the Star Trek ones, and this is not a Star Trek podcast, we play the Rule of Three. This is a game that limits us to no more than three references to Star Trek per episode in total.
That's it. Three.
Uno, dos, tres.
No substitutions, exchanges, or refunds.
You know, Jeff, I'm pretty sure last week I blew through all of my references, all of our references. We didn't get a buzz once last week, though.
No, because you really, I mean, they were... Well, I think a couple times you're even like, well, this is a Star Trek, and also. So it really wasn't a Star Trek thing.
But if we do make Star Trek references, what sound should they hear out there?
Oh, it's a beautiful, beautiful sound, and it's this.
It's not annoying at all.
No, not even a little bit.
Right. Because while this is definitely not a Star Trek podcast, Jeff, those references do tend to get shoved in more so from time to time. And that just happens, although we are better because we used to do three each, and now we just do three total, which is awesome. So that's a game we play. You know another game we like to play?
What's that?
It's a game called
Time to Pay the Piper.
That's right. This is part of the show where we look back at what last week's prediction about this week's episode was going to be, and we see just how right we were or how absolutely wrong we were. Jeff, I don't think that there is a single thing that we have gotten feedback on more than we have on people's responses to our predictions.
For real.
This is the spot. So let's take a look back at what we said last week, that this week's episode was going to be. How close were you? What did you say?
I thought that Regent on Centauri Prime was going to die and Londo was going to be set up to become Emperor.
Not at all. Here's the thing. I'm going to give you like 0.001 just because we got a mention of you're the soon-to-be Emperor, Londo Millard.
Hey, I'll take it. What did you think?
Well, I said that if this one doesn't involve masks with skulls and all that sort of stuff painted on them, then I'm going to riot. And I'm happy to say I do not have to riot because that was definitely, definitely in this episode. I said that this was going to be something where people are celebrating this. It's going to be another culture on Babylon 5, which I nailed that. And that we were going to be seeing the ghost of the past. We're going to be honoring those from the past. Well, not really honoring, but seeing ghosts from the past. Nailed that. However, I said this is where the Brent getting specific kills it. Like if I stay general, I'm okay, but I got specific on it. I said telepaths are going to get involved and screw with people's minds and make them think that they're seeing stuff that maybe they really aren't. We didn't even see telepaths in this one really at all. I also said there's going to be no Lanier, and he 1,000% showed up at the very beginning of the episode. So, you know, looking real suave in his black outfit with the little badge on.
It's a good looking analyst shock. Like he wears it well.
He does, but he still looks like he's wearing his dad's robe. Like I don't know.
The king is back. I'll let you wear the crown on this one, but you got specific. Going to give you 0.8 on this one.
I'll take it.
We had a programming note that a little housekeeping we wanted to bring.
Oh, yeah. Forgot. We just talked about this all of 3 minutes ago and I forgot about it already.
It's going to be fine. This is going to be a great, great, smooth episode. But we've had a lot of comments on YouTube, like on the various videos coming up on Patreon, on our Discord, emails, things like that, on the two words that plagued us for the first season, especially and into the second, then kind of tapered off. But those two words, Brent, are viewing order.
We are well aware that today's episode chronologically falls into like right between like episodes 4 and 5 or something like that. It's like right after, what was it? Learning Curve.
A Review from a Gallery, I think, is when
From a Gallery landed. And Learning Curve. Like it kind of fits in there. We understand that. We got out of order and we have a friend, John, who has a list who kind of helps us mitigate that kind of stuff. We stopped looking at that list a while ago for two reasons. One, because we made an executive decision to save the movies until the end. And so we weren't following that. But then honestly, the order that they come up on iTunes or on Amazon is the same order that John kept giving us. I think we just got out of the habit and we didn't really look as we were going forward. And yeah, we saw some things out there, but we just sort of kept moving at a good pace. And we're just saying, we know that it belongs back there. I think it's fine.
Yeah. Well, depending on who you talk to, it belongs back there, or there's people who think it was going to be later. Here's the bottom line. We made the choice, right? Like we made that choice on the movies that got us off track. We're going to stick to this, right? It's the next one in the app. That's with the iTunes thing. We're going to keep following that. We're going to go through. Here we are. And thank you for your care and your input.
Yes. And frankly, with this particular episode, having now watched it, I'm still kind of like, it didn't really matter. You could have watched this. In fact, I said to you just before we came on mic, like this could have been like episode 2 of the season. It feels like it's so non-time committal.
Yeah, there's like one little line and little thread in Londo's piece that it can't happen after a certain point. We don't know when that point is, but it can happen before most any of them.
It couldn't happen after Londo actually became emperor.
There you go. Yeah.
Outside of that, yeah, have at it.
Soon as Lockley's on board and he's not emperor, anywhere in there. But Brent, we're starting to dive into some specifics on this episode. So before we get too far on that, for those who haven't seen it before, here we are spoiling all the good stuff, right? Before we get too far ahead, Brent, can you tell us what Day of the Dead was all about?
Well, hey, do you remember when the Drazi had their thing about purple and green and we learned a bit about their culture? Well, it's time to learn a bit about the culture of another alien species. This time, it's the Bracari, or is it the Bracari? Well, whatever. They seem to say it both ways. Anyway, they apparently have like a single comet in their system, and it passes by like once every 200 years. And when it does, it signals a Day of the Dead festival, which actually happens at night, but we can't call it Night of the Dead for reasons. Anyway, apparently there's this thing where people laugh, they tell stories, they have feasts, and rumor has it sometimes weird stuff happens. But that's all just stories though, right? So when the Bracari ambassador, quote unquote, buys a bit of Babylon 5 just for a single night, it's not renting though, it's actually buying, but he's going to give it back the next morning. Lockley doesn't really think too much of it. She honors his request. And that's when all hell breaks loose, because now that part of the station is considered Bracar, like their homeworld. It's part of their homeworld, sovereign land. And on that night, an unexplained phenomena happens with absolutely no scientific or fictional or scientific fictional explanation. They even say so in the episode. Sometimes it's just good to have a bit of a mystery. And so we move on. And several of our characters are visited by their ghosts. First up is soon-to-be Emperor Londo Mollari, who is visited by somebody that actually really warmed my heart for him to get to see again, Adira Tyree. It's the true love of Londo's life. They have sex, apparently a lot of it. And she comments on him being the ruler of 40 billion Centauri. But Londo says he'd give it all up just to be with her. Garibaldi is visited by Elizabeth Derman. Don't remember her? It's because we knew her as Dodger. Remember her? Yeah, no real mention that Garibaldi is married because no one remembers Lise either. Dodger tries to sleep with Garibaldi again, and Garibaldi puts her off again. And by morning, she's gone. Garibaldi has missed his shot again. But he's married, so good on him, right? Captain Lockley is visited by Zoe, her little sister. Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. That's an old girlfriend. Oh, was she just a roommate? It's probably a girlfriend. Man, not really super clear, but she was definitely from back in the day when Lockley was a little bit of a wild child. Drug-riddled, poor, cold, party. Lockley apparently found Zoe's body many years ago and always wondered if her death was on purpose or was it an accident. Lockley winds up giving us a bit of her backstory, how she got clean, worked her way up through the military, and before Zoe leaves in the morning, she gives Lockley a message. We'll come back to that one in a minute. And finally, there's Lanier, because, hey, he's back on the station just for the Day of the Dead so he can learn about it. And who does he get visited by? Morden. Yes, that Morden, with a cool new haircut, which makes his face way less punchable. He tells Lanier that he is going to betray the Rangers. Lanier scoffs, and that's pretty much the end of that whole storyline. Well, as for that message that Zoe brought to Lockley, well, turns out that message was for Captain Sheridan, or I'm sorry, President Sheridan. That message was from Kosh, a message that says, when the long night comes, go back to the end of the beginning, whatever that means. And well, that's pretty much the end of the episode. By morning, everything's back to normal. Jakar regrets moving out of his quarters for the night because he kind of is curious what he would have seen. And he notes that everyone seems to be more at peace, which is weird because I didn't get that vibe at all. Oh, yeah. And Penn and Teller, who've been on the station as Rebo and Zooty, they leave because that's the grand total of the impact that they've had on the story during their time here. Jeff, what did you make of this episode, Day of the Dead?
Right out of the gate, I'm just going to read one of my notes here because you, sir, are wrong. You're very wrong about a very key thing here. It is a sin to have Morden's hair looking like that. That man has been given a gift, and this is an affront to God that they made him look like this.
I don't think they made him look like that. I think the actor just came over from whatever he was doing post-Morden time and was like, yeah, I'm not growing out my hair here.
I'm so disappointed. His hair is so great.
But it does make his face entirely less punchable.
That's true. That's very true. Much more just like, I could hang out with this guy kind of a look.
Yeah, exactly.
But dude, I spent at least about 11 minutes of this episode with my head in my hands, almost in tears. Penn and Teller? Like
head in your hands from tears from laughing or from?
Complete, utter defeat.
Okay.
Babylon 5 broke me in the first couple of minutes, and not in the way that like a Confessions and Lamentations did, but in a way of just like, oh my God, we had that one. I forget the episode, but where the computer had that ridiculous AI that you thought was hilarious.
Yeah. The New York accent.
Yeah. And I'm just like, this is an affront. This is horrible. Oh my God. They're going to keep like Garibaldi shot it right in the, and I'm like, yes. And that's, I mean, I enjoy Penn and Teller. I enjoy their work. I think, you know, whatever, they're funny, they're talented, they're all those great things. They're in Babylon. Oh my. Hello, Greg Brady surfing in Hawaii, right? Like this, where's the shark? Because you're Fawn's about
jumping the shark, literally. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Oh my God. But then I got a glimmer of hope. Glimmer of hope. Because we got a deep dive into the Hayak, right? Like you said, back in the second season, we got a deep dive into the Drazi. Ooh, we're going to learn about the Bakiri. Like, I like this, using this time to learn about the other races. I was so ready to hate this episode, and then it turned. Mm. This Day of the Dead is a Star Trek episode.
Yeah.
That happened to be done on Babylon 5. Total Next Generation, maybe even second season of Picard here a little bit, right? Some mysterious thing causes the crew to be mysteriously transported across the galaxy to come face to face with their pasts. But this wasn't just their pasts. Here's the Babylon 5 piece, right? It's a bunch of dead people, and some of those dead people had beef with them, right? We got to look at Lockley, Lanier, and Morden for some reason. Dodger and Adira. Oh my God. I enjoyed that, this little foray into the characters and some story. I thought that was cool. I am really eager to hear what White Star thoughts you have on this one. I want to know what your Rebo and Zooty thoughts are. And yeah, just tell me what about you? Where were you on this one?
I feel like you've built this up in your head and I'm about to disappoint you in so many ways. Jeff, I think the season, this episode is the season's Geometry of Shadows.
I know right where you're at.
You know where I am?
Yep.
On the surface, this looks like a waste of an episode. Was it a comedy? Was it a horror? It had the potential to be either one and it did neither. Some cool stuff happened, but does it ultimately matter? No, not really. However, there was that one thing that that one guy said that probably is going to come back later and be pretty big. So actually, it is more important than you might think. Hello, can you say foreshadowing? Just thoughts. I remember hearing people talk about our reaction to Geometry of Shadows. Foreshadowing. I'm like, yeah, we don't know that it's foreshadowing yet, guys. Anyway, I thought Penn and Teller were a complete waste. They were absolutely wasted on this episode. My problems with this episode overall functionally is there were so many different places, Jeff, that they started getting down a line with something and then they just stopped. For example, as soon as Rebo and Zudi started talking about wanting to quit comedy and do something more exciting, I was like, yeah, okay, let's have that conversation about why being in entertainment is actually an important job and realizing that what you're doing actually matters. Because there's no way they need to do that and go be in politics. They just don't. But they did nothing with it. Like, they had that conversation. Delenn and Sheridan, like, kind of looked at each other. They said, like, a sentence that didn't really make much of a difference. And then they got off. And the next thing we saw, they were walking off the station. And Teller stopped to talk to Sheridan for a second and give him some cryptic message that makes no sense whatsoever. I thought with the ghost, there might be some sort of definitive ghost story. Jakar says at the end, you all seem more at peace. So are these people dealing with unresolved stuff in their life? What the hell is Lanier looking at Morden for? Right. Okay. Maybe what these guys are, these are people who are coming back, who have messages from beyond. We saw that with Zoe. We saw that with Morden. And it really has nothing to do with the person. Like the whoever's in the great beyond is sending these people during the day of death. But then what the hell is Dodger doing there? Like, she didn't further Garibaldi at all. She didn't provide closure for him at all. Loved seeing Londo get with Ladira. I loved that. What impact did that have on anything whatsoever? Did it make Londo ready to be emperor? Did it resolve some conflict that he's had longstanding? No. He got to bonk his girl one more time. And she's like, hey, it's pretty cool. You're going to be over 40 billion people. And they did nothing. Like, that one was like a 50. Like, they just didn't do much with it. You know, this was a lot of really cool concept that they could have gone somewhere that, to me, failed in execution. It was a lot of false starts. And that was my overall impression of this episode.
I don't think that, and you said it, that Londo and Adira went one time. I think they went six times.
Yeah, I got to admit, there is a piece of me, like, I'm looking at Adira. She's got like, her shoulders are bare.
Mm-hmm.
And she's definitely got some sort of clothing on, and she's got the head thing going on. And I'm sitting here just trying to go, where are the six places?
Yeah.
On her body that connections get made. Like, boop, where are those six places? I'm just curious.
Where's that video? Also, please don't share it.
Please don't. Don't produce it and no. Don't share it if it exists out there. I do not need to see that.
I think though Adira played a really important role in this one. I think it's so I still have I'm not sure the Dodger one. I haven't really figured out what she was there for other than like a cool callback, you know, like, oh, that was fun.
Jeff, I'm sorry. Can I stop you real quick? Cause I want to talk to everybody out there just for a second. Please do not fire off a bunch of things doing a deep dive explaining all of this to us just yet, especially if this is making connections back to previous episodes or stuff that's coming forward. Let Jeff and I get that on the second watch. And once we get to the second watch, we get back here, have at it. But for right now, let us try to figure this out. Like, we're trying to figure out what the hell these guys were all doing here. Let us be in this space right now. Go ahead, Jeff.
Because to your point, Geometry of Shadows taught us the level of foreshadowing that happens in this show. So, like, now we're going to have that lens to look at this, you know? So, but I think with Adira, like, there's a surface level thing where it just felt good, you know? It's like, yeah, Londo gets something nice to happen to him. And and this is good. But I actually thought about it in terms of the Catholic Mass. So in the Catholic Mass on Sundays and other high feast days, there are four readings from the Bible, actual scripture that we read, and then the priest can use that for his homily to build off of. There's generally a reading from the Old Testament during the period after Easter and the octave of Easter. That's from the Acts of the Apostles, but generally it's the Old Testament. Then there's a psalm that is generally sung. Then there's a second reading, usually from the epistles, right? So St. Paul's letters, maybe St. John's letters. Then there's the gospel reading itself. Now, the psalm, and the psalm will generally tie to the gospel in a real, you know, kind of loose way. The second reading from the letters, that's just there. Sometimes it lines up, sometimes it doesn't. But the first reading is specifically built to do what we say as Catholics, to give us Jewish ears, so that when we hear the gospel recited, we can hear it as the Jews from the time of Jesus would have heard this. You know, so they're going to talk about this thing in the gospel, and you're like, oh, that's because of this thing they talked about in Job, or the when Moses said, you know, so you kind of prep us. There's a tie in the first reading to prepare you for the gospel reading. And I think that this moment with Adira was our first reading. This was to prepare us for what's about to go down with Londo. We needed to remember not Londo the genociding person,
right,
not
right.
Londo the guy who had Rifa taken out by a bunch of Narns. We had to remember the Londo who forgot how to dance. We had to remember Londo who saw himself as a burnt out old Republican, you know. And so I think that this is not just foreshadowing. It's like Adira's not going to play a role, but it had to put our minds back in a place with Londo.
So you think that that was Adira coming to visit Londo was less about the benefit of Londo and more for the benefit of us as a viewer?
Yes. Yes.
Interesting. I think you're 1,000% right about that. Or even that Londo needed to be reminded he doesn't care about the.
Yeah.
You know, like he said for a while, like he doesn't really want to be emperor. Like he doesn't, he just wants to serve his people. What was the thing he said to her? Like the one boast he made to her.
I'm the savior of our people.
Which is a bit rich, but he's probably also not wrong. Like he is the destroyer of Narn, the savior of the Centauri, and the savior of Narn.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, maybe our people, right, goes beyond that. But you take that. I'm the savior of our people, to use your word, juxtaposed with, I would give those 40 billion people up for you.
I love that as a message. I still don't see, like, if she would have come back with a message for Londo of like, remember how to dance, like, let that be his message. Like, remember how to dance. Like, be like, yeah, Londo, do that. Let's make that happen. Like, that'd be cool. You know?
Yeah.
She didn't. And I could definitely see your whole piece about that. I got to tell you though, I just thought it was so good to see her again. I think we'd written her off so long ago, and to this isn't a clip from when she was on the episode before. This was her like on set filming new material. Like, so good. 40 billion is a lot of people, Jeff.
It's a lot of people.
We got 8, 9 on Earth today.
Yeah, and we're losing it. Like, we're freaking out. Like, what do we do? Oh my God.
40 billion folks. Garibaldi. Let's talk about him for a sec.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm done.
Well, I have to tell you, I was offended. There was one line in this whole thing that personally offended me. And I'm just like, I don't know what in the world. How could you put this ink on paper, let it dry, and then let someone speak this on television? Capers on pizza? What? Are you kidding me? Hey, you know sushi, that stuff you eat with bubble gum. What's wrong with her? Capers go on sandwiches.
Capers go in the trash.
No, here's a great way. There's a great caper recipe.
No, I'm sorry. No, you know where capers go? In the cabinet, because you never use them for anything. That's where capers go. Everyone has them. Just in the cabinet.
Bought it one time because a recipe said capers.
They've been there since 1989.
That's a great thing you can do with capers. It's kind of it's similar to what you can do with kale. And it works really well. But what you do is you get a surface, a plate, a platter, something like that, and you coat it with coconut oil. And then you lay the capers on top of it. And that coconut oil becomes important, or the kale, because that coconut oil makes it easier for it to slide off the platter into the garbage.
I was going to say, it's interesting you said kale, because that's where they both belong.
But then the second thing she said that actually was just like, oh, she said technomancy. And if there's technomancy, that means the Technomages might do a thing. And I just got excited that there was a tie. And I love now that I'm saying this, that you tied this to Geometry of Shadows. And there's a real subtle callback to Technomages. All right, that's Garibaldi.
Yeah, I mean, okay, Garibaldi's married. We've established that, right? Like, he seems to have forgotten about it.
I think so. I thought so.
I thought he was. Garibaldi's married. This girl shows up. That is, okay. I mean, let's ask, would it, if he would have slept with her, was that cheating? This is not a real person. This is a ghost that does not really exist. All right, I'm not even going to get into that. Well, she's going to be gone by morning, so who would ever know? Like, Garibaldi would know, and that's going to be on his conscience. But, like, did she, like, her and Adira, like, were they physically, I mean, they had to be physically there if stuff could have happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, but if, yes or no, I'm going to pin you down. Yes or no, if Garibaldi would have slept with Dodger, was he cheating on his wife?
Yes.
Okay. They're sitting there. I feel like they kissed once or twice. Her head is on his lap, really close to his junk, maybe on his junk.
Yeah, he kind of even went, whoa.
There's a lot of caressing. There's a lot of laughing and flirting. Yes or no, was Garibaldi cheating on his wife?
Yes. I heard someone say once, cheating doesn't start when when it happens.
Yeah.
It, capital it.
Welcome cheating, to our PG show here.
Yeah. Cheating happens the minute you respond to the direct message or the text message.
Mm.
Cheating begins, and I've come to believe this.
Yeah.
I've come to accept this, that cheating begins in the mind.
I 100% am with you on that. 100% with you on that. So here's then the question. Let me ask this. These ghosts, were they real or were they projections? Were they in the mind of these people?
I think that that's a, God, it's a tough question. I can't, because on one hand, yeah. On the other hand, like, they brought new material to them. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to think of the show. It's something that my daughter watches, some animated show, and the person's having a real crisis. And oh, it was The Simpsons. A Simpsons episode where Bleeding Gums Murphy dies,
yeah,
and is talking to Lisa. And Lisa's like, meets his son, right, who has a hearing impairment. And there's all this stuff. She takes up his cause. And then, like, she has a dream. And the vision of Bleeding Gums Murphy is talking to her. And she's like, oh, you really think that? And he says, hey, this is your dream. I'm going to think what and say whatever you want me to think and say. I don't think these people said what they would have wanted them to think and say. I think they were real.
Mm. Well, of course I'm in your mind, but why should that make it any less real?
Ooh.
It's another way to say that. I mean, I think the truth is we don't know. Like, what was this weird bubble that everybody was in that Sheridan threw something at and it went way too slow to come back at him with that much force?
I hated that scene, but I loved that scene. Like, I watched it over and over, like on my rewatch for notes. I'm like, I just want to watch that again.
Do you know why Sheridan was in this episode?
Because he's in the opening credits.
Well, because he was contractually already paid for it. They'd already paid him for it. That's it.
Get dressed. Go throw this fire extinguisher that's smaller than a can of soda.
Right. Him and Delenn had zero actual purpose in this episode. I guess while we're here, let's talk about people with zero purpose in this episode. Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
Now, what was your reaction when you saw Penn and Teller come out?
The second they walked out, I was just like, oh, so TNT is forcing guest stars on them now.
Yes, that's 1,000. I mean, this is what CW was doing when they tried to get Enterprise to put a boy band in the mess hall of Enterprise.
Yes.
They did it with Charmed. They did it on what was it? Dawson's Creek. I feel like they've done it. They did it on so many of those shows. TNT definitely. This has every bit of that feel that they tried to force that on. Rebo and Zuki were not funny.
No, I say, here's my exact note. I can't believe I'm watching this. I am Lockley rolling my eyes and I'm looking for a reason to leave too.
I really kind of wish, like, I hope that Penn and Teller were forced on them by the studio. JMS wrote them to be stupid and Lockley served as JMS, i.e. our proxy on screen.
It's the closest he could get to keffering them without keffering them. Stand by. We'll be right back. Are you ready to take your Babylon 5 for the first time experience to the next level? With our exclusive Patreon, you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff that you can only find there. Our recording notes, unedited reaction videos, an exclusive Discord community, and you can even be listed as a producer of the show. Plus, we even offer exclusive meet and greets and hangouts. You won't find this kind of experience anywhere else. Get all these amazing benefits, plus the opportunity to interact with other fans from around the world. It's being part of a huge community where everyone shares the same appreciation for Babylon 5. Subscribe at patreon.com/Babylon5first. That's the number 5 and the word first to get access to these incredible benefits. That's patreon.com/Babylon5first. We can't wait to see you there.
Although I got to say, when I first saw them, I was very excited because I love Penn and Teller.
They are great.
If something you don't know about me, I told the folks on Brent Watches this. When I was growing up, my best friend lived two doors down from me. His name was David. He was a year or so younger than I was. Best friend growing up, you know, over at each other's houses all the time. David, genius of a kid. Like this kid, when he was 9 years old, so this is 89, 90, when the internet is still like military bound, created a website selling brass knuckles.
What?
Yes. A 9 year old created a website selling brass knuckles. To this day, it is the number one retailer of brass knuckles in the world. This man does almost nothing with it. As far as I understand, he just sits back and paper money in the mail. Number one retail. Like, it's all automated. Like, this man did Amazon before Jeff Bezos did Amazon. He just nailed it down to brass knuckles. Wow. My friend David also got into magic. He was the magician, the magic. Now, I've always had a bit of a flair for the showman. Love David. He didn't. We teamed up as kids because we were best friends, and we had a Penn and Teller act that we would do at birthday parties and different things like that. We had it all set out, and it was the same basic idea. I did the speaking. David did not. And it was, so there was a lot of studying of Penn and Teller and how they worked. And they were very big influences on a very young me. Loved watching them. I was so ready for this to be a comedy. It was not a comedy.
No.
Oh, when they're sitting there having their conversation, and I mentioned it earlier about they want to give up comedy to go do something important. I'm going to save the rest of that conversation, but I was so disappointed that just fell so flat. There is a finish to that episode. There is a finish to that conversation.
I thought of you in that line, because I'm just like, this is Brent is a working for like traveling touring comedian. He knows this, and good comedy has a real message. It's the most it can be one of the most subversive ways to get really difficult conversations and concepts across to people in ways that are relatable and that you can hear and understand. And I was just like, this is Brent's jam, and they're not even kind of
when Rebo said we can say something really cool, but then it gets lost in the comedy. I disagreed so vehemently. It's like, it doesn't get lost in the comedy. It lands because of the comedy. It gets through it. It does for the message what placing stuff in sci-fi does. This is why we do this show. This is why sci-fi is uniquely positioned as a genre to hold up a mirror to society and show us who we are. It's because you can do it in the form of aliens, so it's not offensive, and it could show us right here, right? Like, sci-fi is uniquely positioned to give us these messages and these tales and these to give us hope for a future in a way that crime procedurals and sitcoms and dramas and legal things and hospital shows, those are not positioned to be able to do in a way that sci-fi is. Comedy is that same way, for being able to comment and criticize and bolster and shape the attitudes of society. Comedy has a way of doing that because it comes in the form of comedy and people are more ready to accept it.
Yep.
He was so wrong in that. And that's all going to play into my White Star thoughts. Cool. So I'm going to stop here.
I'm excited to hear about it. But yeah, I mean, I have nothing else on Rebo and Zooty other than, hey, that's cool. They studied other cultures' humor. And that little cryptic line at the end was literally just like, hey, let's feed something to them to say it, to close off a storyline that meant nothing.
To show Teller actually said, he said one word to his partner, but he's going to say four to Sheridan because it told me so, or whatever he said.
They had a newspaper Right, because Corwin was like trying to do some stuff, and there was this newspaper that was there. Did you catch any of the headlines on the newspaper?
I didn't. I just saw the one, the Penn and Teller, their actual photo, not Penn with this weird wig going on. I saw their picture, and I just thought it was pushing back to them all the time. No, what did they say?
Yeah, so I actually paused the thing when they showed the front and the back and everything to get the pieces. So there was a Meet Rebo and Zooty up close and personal. Babylon 5 will air a Rebo and Zooty movie marathon that Lockley got caught into. Then there's a Rebo and Zooty arrive. Then there was a couple here that were kind of interesting. Interstellar Alliance talks to resume. Londo Mollari to become...
I'm sorry, wait. What is resume? Do we know?
Exactly. I never knew they stopped.
Okay.
That's maybe there's something...
Wait. Read that again.
Interstellar Alliance talks to resume.
I thought you meant Resume was like a news magazine or something, and that they were talking to them. Like, is it, you're talking about the talks to Resume? Okay, interesting.
And maybe now that I just said that we're talking about, maybe that's one of those plot points and where things land that this did matter. But also it doesn't matter.
Because wasn't it in, what were those episodes? Learning Curve and View from the Gallery that people were like stonewalling the Alliance?
Not really.
Yeah, wasn't it like it was, because remember the Drazi were like, oh, we don't have to sign a pledge of anything because we're amazing, and yet we're actually jacking these people up over here.
Yeah, it might have been around to that in the hiccups there, but there was a little one, Londo Mollari to become Centauri Emperor, and I think this one was important because
I saw that one, by the way.
It was teeny tiny and it was below the fold, and Londo saw that, right? And he was just like, yeah, you're not even above the fold news, dude, like.
Dude, that is not anything I would have picked up until like my second, third, fourth viewing.
Yeah, this was my second. I saw the stuff, but I went back on my second one. Reclamation of San Diego Wasteland gets underway.
Okay.
Maybe this is where Bureau 13 pops up again. Stocks, how your credit rates. Then there were the two that I think that might turn into things. One was the Earth Senate votes for more money on Titan reforming, or on Titan terraforming.
Titan being a moon of Neptune?
I think so. I think it's Neptune. And then the other one, a Narn consulate opens on Mars amid controversy.
There's a controversy. Okay. Yeah. Those are, you know, Jeff, here's the thing. I would totally write those off, except in our very first episode, you get to the end and you're like, hey, did you hear what that newscaster said as the episode was fading to black about President Clark and all this? And I'm like, yeah. And you're like, that's going to be like a central thing of the whole deal. And they put it right here. And I'm like, yeah. And yeah, that's literally what ignited the whole thing.
Right. Two whole seasons of that yeah, as it was fading out.
Yeah. Let's talk more than Lanier, because that one should go quick. All right. First of all, Lanier, dude, literally, here's my note. Right as I gave up on seeing him again, he waltzes right back into my life.
Zabba Gabi, just right out of nowhere.
Yeah. And then, man, he's, oh, Delenn, so good to see you. And he goes, how is your partner?
Your partner.
And Delenn goes, my husband, he's fine. And I'm sitting here going, dude, you know Sheridan personally. She does not have to say my husband. She could say John. You know him. You do not know. Come on now.
So petty.
Oh. Honestly, if you're that petty, you shouldn't be on the shock. Anyway, those were my two initial notes on Lanier. What did you think, Jeff? I'm curious. When Lanier popped on the station, he popped up on screen. What was your reaction?
Eh.
Yeah. So underwhelming, right?
Yeah.
Like, it should have been a big moment, and it wasn't.
I feel like he had to be here because there was some foreshadowing that occurred. But other than that, I think it's a huge waste of how he could have showed up.
Shadows part. Hey, that one line happened with that one guy over there.
Here it is.
Yeah.
And that one line, you're going to betray the Analyshock.
Oh, I would die before I did that. And he's like, okay. And then like they had that line and he goes, I would do this. And then literally all that happened was Morden sat in a chair and read a newspaper until it was time for him to disappear.
Yep.
That was it. Like, what?
And then, he got a little jab in, right? He's like, you know, well, Delenn doesn't love you the way that you love her. Yeah. But I thought it was neat because he's like, I already know that. And he's like, actually, you don't. In your heart, you don't know that.
That might be a catalyst for how he's going to wind up betraying the Analyshock.
That's what I think, too.
Yeah.
Go after Intilza.
I think he, when he betrays the Analyshock, because I think that's coming. Like, I 100%, I'm like, yep, that's going to happen. I don't think he's going to intend to do it though.
Okay.
He's going to do it, but I don't think he's going to intend to do it. You know, I don't think he, in his mind, it's not going to be betraying them, but it will be.
He's going to think he's doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I think. That's what I think. And maybe he really will be doing the right thing.
All right. Then we got Zoe.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. When Rebo and Zooty met Delenn and Sheridan, and Zooty plays the little machine and it tells this joke in Minbari that none of us actually understood in Delenn's, I 1000% really appreciated how slow Delenn took to laugh. Like she heard it. It was, you could see like the acting on that was amazing.
Yeah.
Because it had to go through her brain. You could see it running through her brain a couple of times. And she's like, oh, that is a joke. Oh, that's really funny. Yeah. Like it was so well acted and well played as juxtaposed, Jeff, everybody else laughing to Rebo and Zooty, which was fake and awful and horrible. We've already covered that.
Yes. Terrible.
Jakar walking into CNC with his robe and in his PJs, but it wasn't the bathrobe with the chest piece.
Right.
That just goes to show where Jakar's come. Like, think about it. He used to be that dude, you know, with three girls walking out of the room, most of them Centauri, if I remember right. And then this one, you know, here he is in a full like monk's robe coming out.
But also, like, Babylon 5 is huge. And you're going to go ask to sleep in CNC?
There's not a hotel on Babylon 5 you can't go for a night.
Can I go sleep in Lockley's office?
Can I go to Talon's room? Any of the fellow Narns on the station?
One square mile out of this massive thing is gone, and you go to, okay.
Maybe that's like one fifth of the station, right? Like, that's a huge part.
It's a big chunk, but like there's a lot of the station left.
Yeah.
And talking about acting, like, you know, Mira Ferland's acting, I agree. That was awesome. I thought Tracy Scoggins did a great job in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because she had this balance of like, I have this, what I'll call core trauma in her life that she's face to face with. But at the same time, she's like, I'm captain of the station. There's weird stuff going on. I have to try to work to help solve this problem. And she just did a great job in being present in that moment, in those moments with Zoe, but also really impressed with her.
Yeah, she did. She did the thing she needed to do. I also appreciated the look. I'm pretty sure if we just let this go till morning, it'll be fine. Although her just popping in on Garibaldi unannounced should not. I mean, like, that needs to be a ring and you have to say here, like, you lose the comedic awkward zooming in, you know.
It's totally Spaceballs when Lord Helmet's using the bathroom, right? Oh, President Scroob! Oh.
Or when he's actually, President Scroob was in bed with the two girls.
Yeah.
He comes up and he's got the book upside down or whatever. Yeah. And then she does it again to the other person.
To Londo, yeah.
Yeah, to Londo. That's right. But yeah, Zoe and Lockley. I got to tell you, when Zoe first appeared, everything about that whole interaction said to me, little sister.
Totally.
Did not say, is a former girlfriend was, I think, the ultimate thing they were going for.
That never clicked for me. I went from kid sister to like best friend. Like, we were best friends who ran off doing drugs.
Maybe I'm doing that thing where I see two people and I want to put them together in a relationship that they don't actually have. Because they really never were clear about it. Although it did, there were some romantic overtones, it seemed to me at times, but never anything explicit. They did do a lot of partying.
Yeah.
And by that, bad stuff. And she was like, do you got any stuff? She's like, I've been dead for 20 years. Can I do something while I'm here?
Do you got any new cool stuff? Like, what have they done to this? But I think, like, I definitely got trauma bond, right? And so, like, We're going to go party. We're going to run off. We're going to live wherever we can live, sleep wherever we can sleep, as long as we're getting, you know, our next fix is around the corner. And so I never got romance, but like we've talked about that, romance isn't my mother tongue. And, you know, so maybe that's why I didn't pick up on it. But to me, it really hit like trauma bond. And like I said, it's a core memory, a core trauma. I mean, her passcode is Zoe's dead.
That was a little over the top for me, honestly.
Very on the nose.
Now, I got to be honest. I think I've said this on the show before. My Wi-Fi password is the name of my dead dog 2 dogs ago. You know, like I get it, but I'm not, my pass. It's not it's not Sam is dead. It's just Sam. Like the passcode would just be Zoe, not Zoe's dead. Like, no, to me, I'm not speaking to anyone else's trauma or what that looks like, because this clearly is something that has influenced her all the way up. But think about where she's gone. So she was a drug riddled teenager, maybe young 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Gets rescued by her Marine uncle or whatever she said.
Her dad.
Didn't she say it was he sent like the uncle or something like that? No, it was dad, right?
With buddies from his platoon.
Yeah. So she grew up as a military brat, but out of that situation, she goes off to join the forces and works. She's clean and gets her life together and works her way up to being the captain of a station. Like, that's a pretty good bump. That's a pretty good jump, but she still has all this old stuff. She found her friend dead and never knew why.
And the core thing, and I want to acknowledge right now, we're going to talk about self-harm. We're going to talk about suicide for a minute. So skip ahead if this is activating for you in any way. Pausing. Okay. She didn't know. Did you do this on purpose?
Yeah.
Right. And it was a big thing. And it was powerful when she kind of, when Zoe explained a little bit, like, at first it wasn't, but then it was on purpose.
So I couldn't go on anymore, which I thought was real interesting, because you have Zoe, who we first met her, and she's like, hey, you got any more stuff? Like, let's do something fun. Let's go. Actually, I couldn't go on anymore. That's what happened. Like, that is such a change in where you are. I think it's very pictorial of an addict.
Okay.
When you get into a sober spot as an addict and you go, I can't do this anymore. But then when you're in your old triggers, you're like, yeah, let's just go do this. Because what does it do? It numbs the pain. It takes you out of all this stuff. You just want it. You enjoy it and all of that stuff. And yeah, she was here for something. That's a first response. I thought that was real interesting, but you're right. The way that Tracy Scoggins portrayed this whole deal, again, this led us down a road that it never delivered on, though, because here you have a character who has unresolved stuff in their life. Oh, wait, Londo has unresolved stuff in his life. Oh, Garibaldi has unresolved stuff with Dodger, but he's married now. Lanier has unresolved stuff with Morton. No, okay, that it all falls apart at that point.
Yeah, and even like it starts to at Garibaldi, but I think if we think about it, it might be, I never questioned him and Lise, but maybe this was a thing of just like, hey, by the way, look, good dude, he's gonna, you know, in his mind stay faith. I don't know. Does he have, it's Garibaldi and Lanier that the whole thing kind of falls apart around.
It really does. It really does. And that's just where I go back to. Now I have one major, okay. So she comes in, she has this message for Sheridan. Let's talk about this message real quick.
Yeah.
When the long night comes, go back to the end of the beginning. Let's start at the end. What is the end of the beginning?
I thought about that a lot. And the best I can come up with is the end, the beginning. I got to start there. What's the beginning? And I would think the beginning is Lorien and the ancient ones and the first ones.
Mm.
So what's the end of that? The end of that was when they mission accomplished and went out beyond the rim. So my thought is, well, let's pause there. What where's your beginning and end?
I think the beginning to me was Sheridan's life. And the end is when he lost his life, which we got confirmed in this episode that he died at Zahadum. To go back to the end of the beginning, because stuff didn't really start happening for Sheridan until the Lorien stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the everything before that would be beginning. So the end of the beginning, go back to that space. He's got to go back to Zahadum.
Okay.
Now Zahadum's blown up right now, but he's got to go back to Zahadum. That's my thought. Right now, people are thinking, oh, you're so wrong. Yeah, I probably am.
Yeah, we have no idea. Because my guess is it's telling him to go beyond the rim. So the ancient and first ones went beyond the rim. And so he says, when the long night comes, and the episode The Long Night taught us that that's the end of a peak conflict. And so we'll have some peak conflict come up. And when that's done, Sheridan needs to go. It's time for Sheridan and his people to go beyond the rim.
Wow. Sheridan and his people specifically, or Sheridan and his people as in humans?
I think humans. Wow. I think.
So what he's saying is, hey, when it comes time for humans to leave this galaxy,
come with us.
Wow. But Sheridan's only got like less than 20 years left, man. Like,
sort of, you know, I mean, yes, but also we know that that's not necessary. I mean, he died.
It's not necessarily the end, right?
And we know that in 1,000 years, was it 1,000 years that, or however, I forget the breakdown that we got in the Deconstruction of Falling Stars, but they're going to start telling the story of Babylon 5 and Sheridan as a holy book. Maybe it's up to him to leave that message that, you know, here's,
I think it got up to 1,000 years.
I think it was 1,000. Yeah. 1,000. And then it jumped to 1,000,000.
It was like a year. And then it was like 100 years. And then it was like 500 years. And then it was 1,000 with the, or, and then maybe it was like 100,000 or 1,000,000.
Well, it was 1,000,000. It was 1,000,000 when, yeah, when the sun blew up and all that stuff went down.
Oh, cause they all went
beyond the,
yeah,
rim.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they went beyond the rim. I don't know, but, or maybe that's it. The beginning was Midnight on the Firing Line, and the end was Deconstruction of Falling Stars, and we're just in the prologue now. So when the long night of the prologue happens, go back to the end of the beginning, which is wherever dude went in his Analyshock ship when the sun blew up. I confused myself saying all that.
Basically, I think that just means it's time to watch Babylon 5 again. okay, so here's the bigger question. Morden comes with a message. You're going to betray the Endless Shock. I don't really know that that's a message as much as I'm going to rub your face in it, but it feels like a message. Zoe comes with a message. Dodger, we could maybe pull a message out of our butts about that one, but I don't think there really existed one, which is why this breaks down. Londo, again, you could kind of pull a message out of that, but I think it kind of breaks down. Here's the question. Why does each person get the person that they get? Because it clearly doesn't have to do with unresolved conflict that you're having to resolve. As Jakar suggested at the end, where he's like, you all seem more peaceful. Like, no, they don't. The bigger question, who is sending these people? If it's not a creation of their own soul and they're coming with a message, who is sending them?
I think, and this might be a controversial opinion, but I think no one has any idea. I think the whole thing was contrived and made up with no explanation whatsoever for the sole purpose of getting a handful of messages out. And then they didn't have enough content to fill a full 43-minute episode, so they tossed in a couple more.
I think that's it, Jeff. I think the God's honest truth is Lanier is going to betray the Endless Shock, and Sheridan gets this cryptic message from Kosh from beyond the grave.
And then we get some Lockley development. We learn a little bit about Lockley.
A little bit of that. And that is the full extent of the purpose of this episode, which may be fine, but still, like...
I would have loved in this? Do you know what I would have loved?
What's that?
If Ivanova was still on the station and Talia came back.
No, I disagree.
Really?
Because if Talia would have come back, if Talia would have come back and she was evil Talia, that's the only way I would accept it. If Talia came back and she was bland, vanilla Talia before, no. You know who should have come back instead? It'd be her mom or her dad.
Ooh, that's good too.
You know, probably her mom, frankly, because the whole a theme that they really just sort of dropped and never did much with, Ivanova's a latent telepath.
Well, no, if you remember in that pivotal moment at the end of the Shadow War, when the telepaths swooped in and Ivanova was at the front with Bester because they were strong telepaths and they're the whole, never mind.
I mean, it is what allowed her to plug into the great machine, and then she realized that the shadows knew her name in that one episode. But like,
and got that piece of the President Clark stuff that whatever.
Yeah, it's it's a neat thing, but what is it? What did it matter?
I just think back to, I think it was Ceremonies of Light and Dark when is that the one that was after Severed Dreams?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Oh yeah, that's the one where Delenn wound up in the hospital and like. She gave them all the new uniforms, right?
Yeah, but they all went in and shared something secret, the rebirth ceremony. And Ivanova's was, I think I might have been in love with Talia. And nothing ever came from that ever. This would have been an awesome place to go back and visit that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of other cool ones that we could have grabbed. I'm trying to think, are there anybody or any other big losses we had that would have been cool? Have Narun come to Delenn.
Mm. Or Dukat.
Oh, yes. Yeah. They could have done some cool stuff with this.
Done some cool stuff. Get Michael O'Hara back and let him do a thing. Because he's dead by now.
Dead for 1,000 years, you know? Yeah.
You know what I want? You know what I really want?
What's that?
And I'm sure they're never going to come back to this. I want to go find wherever he went after he was doing his thing as Valen.
Like afterwards.
He had a bajillion kids. And then he wound up living in like exile on some island somewhere. Like, I want to go find that island that he was on. Like,
I would love the story of Valen, period. Right. Let's see that story and then have that. Like Valen, the after years.
Right.
It'd be cool.
Right.
I think that we have reached the point of this conversation where we boil this all down. Check and see if this episode has any deep morals, messages to it, or if it's holding up a mirror to society, or maybe, possibly, even giving us hope that we might be better in the future. But at the same time, we're looking at how much it delivers that message in its own unique Babylon 5 way. Brent, you get to do that by rating this episode on a scale of 0 to 5 white stars. What do you got?
I might be mean on this one, Jeff.
Okay.
I'm actually going to tell you my rating first, and then I'm going to explain it. But I'm going to reserve a caveat that I may change my rating as I talk myself into something.
Okay.
And Jeff, I'm going to allow you some input on this. If you want to stump for something, here's my initial rating. No white stars.
Wow. Okay.
And here's why. Because what do we say? Does this show have a message? And how does it deliver it in a Babylon 5 way? This episode doesn't really have much of a message. It started having some messages. It never finished them. It didn't deliver the message. Let me give you the message that this episode really should have tackled, that it wanted to tackle. Again, I go back to Rebo and Zudi sitting there saying, hey, we think we want to give up comedy because we want to do something that's important. Hey, this is something that actually I could kind of relate to Londo and Lady Adira and what they got going on. I could also relate this to, Lanier, who has given up something to do something that he felt was important. I could also relate this to, Lockley, who gave up something to do something important. But for Rebo and Zudi specifically, they say they want to do something important. And Sheridan gets so close to saying, yeah, but we need you. Your comedy is important. Comedy is like, that is an important job. Jeff, folks out there know I've been a stay-at-home dad for a number of years. And as often as I talk about, like, you know, it's hard because you just feel like, man, I'm just wasting my life. Oh, but do you know how important it is to be raising good kids? Like, that's a really important job to raise the next generation. Like you get that sort of platitude that they're not wrong. It doesn't feel good, but they're not wrong. This might be a little bit like that. Here's the deal. Entertainment is important. Comedy is important. Being an entertainer is important. You mentioned earlier, I used to do stand-up comedy. That is absolutely true. I stopped. That's actually when I started getting into podcasting because I had a creative thing that I needed an outlet for, and I wasn't able to go out every night and be on tour. And even having a residency working night like that, I just didn't have that ability anymore. I still don't at this point. During COVID, though, this became crystal clear to me, though, Jeff. During COVID, I don't know about you. You started during COVID, right? During COVID, as a podcaster, as a YouTuber, I was with a different podcast. I was like 2 podcasts ago for me, and it was wildly popular. There was some important pieces that happened. It was the NFL podcast, the PewterCast. Love that show. But as a podcaster, as a YouTuber / as an entertainer, I felt a personal responsibility for helping folks get through lockdown and for helping folks get through COVID. It was never more apparent and clear to me the need for entertainers than when we had to all stay home. Whether it was right or wrong, whether you agreed with it or not, that's not the point. We were all staying home. The need to be able to have something to kind of take your mind off the stuff, the need to have something that people can just laugh at or just be together around, people they can rally around as a fandom. By the way, I would also feel the same way about professional athletes. Like, I'm really glad that the professional sports leagues really strove to keep their stuff going, because people need that. You need that piece. Like, that's a big part of society. There are a few things that we need as human beings to survive: clothing, food, shelter. At some point, you need medical care. At some point, you need companionship, love, community. Entertainment's down that list. But when we start talking about quality of life, enjoyment of life, entertainment's a big thing. When you're building a city, you play those sim games like Civilization or any of these where you build a thing. You've got to put in a movie theater. You've got to put in an art theater. You've got to put in, because your people, you got to put in a park because people have to be able to have recreation to not riot. You know what I mean? Like there is an important responsibility for people in comedy that really, really matters. And the people who can do it well should be doing it. I don't feel that urgency now because we're on the other side of it. If you and I were to stop doing podcasting tomorrow, Jeff, it doesn't feel like that monumental. But being in a spot where it was needed, it felt monumental. Now, I say all of that to say, when you and I get these emails, when we get these messages from people who were in surgery and we help them get through their surgery, or people who were in the hospital for 6, 8, 9 months, and we were a part of their healing process, you know, like us here, Babylon 5 for the first time, not some other podcast like this one right here. Or when we get emails about people who are in familial relationships that are in trouble, husband and wife, father and son, you know, whatever. And we gave them a point of commonality that they could base a relationship on again. And it saves a relationship. We get those emails. We've had a handful of these emails. You sit back and you realize, not just comedy, entertainment, what we're doing here, it matters. It matters huge. Like, for some people out there, this is the thing. I think of Dan Davidson over at the Trek Geeks podcast, who talks about how an episode of Deep Space Nine stopped him from committing suicide. I feel like correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, we've had a few emails where people have like been on the verge of suicide. Oh, well, we had one not too long ago.
Yeah.
People have been on the verge of suicide, and Babylon 5 is what helped get them through. There was one we got, I don't know, a year ago, Jeff, where I'm not going to share the full story, but basically this person was in such a bad spot. It was like for a year and a half, they just watched Babylon 5 on repeat.
And that was
it. Apparently, if you just watch it on repeat, you can get it done in about like 4 or 5 days. Like just on repeat. Like that's literally all this person did. And he did it for like a year and a half. And Babylon 5 helped him get through. Like, and that's not us, but that's Babylon 5. But still, like, comedy is important. And doing that thing, if you're gifted in it, is important. And don't lose sight of that, which is actually truly important, to go do something that is also important, just because you see it as bigger and better. That's all I got. Babylon 5 didn't say that. That was not the message they put out there.
Nope.
They had a chance. They could have said something like, hey, tell people you love them before you don't have a chance to anymore. That didn't happen. Hey, you got to face your fears, face your internal demons, face the thing that haunts you from the past to be able to move forward. Yeah, but that's not where they went with this episode either. So I gave this one 0 white stars. Because it didn't really have a message, and the ones that it did have, it still didn't even deliver them Babylon 5 way or another.
I have two thoughts that come to mind. One is affirming what you just said. Well, one, I hope that it hurt them to say that, right? What you want us to say, that our comedy doesn't make a difference? Because I'll tell you, two performers that believe they're making a difference in the world are Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
You know, so I hope that they were like, oh God, it's a good thing they're paying us a lot, because this is a lie. But it also reminds me of a very specific date, and that's September 13th, 2001. Now, most people, when you say September in 2001, you think of 9/11, right? Because that's a day. And so, you know, terrorists succeeded on U.S. soil. They killed a bunch of people and caused what became global havoc for a long time. Still, but the world stopped. The United States specifically stopped. I have stories, share another time and place, but I was working in the movie theater industry at the time, and I worked that day, and it was weird. And a day I'll never forget. A lot of people will never forget that day. But on September 13th, the very first large gathering occurred in the United States. It was in San Antonio. And it was a taping that went live of WWE SmackDown. Mm. And historians have looked back. You know, we have the gift of hindsight at this point now. And that moment when Vince McMahon decided and his team agreed to continue with their taping in San Antonio, Texas, 2 days after the tragedy, after the attack, that was the moment that we were able to start getting back. Entertainment told people that things were going to be okay. Not good, right? Not awesome, but okay. You can show up again. So just echoing what you were saying. On the White Star conversation, the one thing I'll offer And I hesitate to even offer a white star on this one because I don't think I would give it one myself on there. But there was a moment, an object lesson, where Lockley's about to agree to sell the station for a day to the Bracciri, which I don't know about you, but if you have a sale with a set end date to it, isn't that a lease?
It's like, a rental.
A rental. Yeah.
Call it what you want. It's a rental.
Yeah. So it's whatever. But Jakar comes in.
It could be a sell, like if it's just like a handshake gentleman's agreement, like, hey, we're going to do this and it's going to be official. And while I don't have to, I'm going to give it back to you right the next day. Like, that's the only way that I think it actually becomes official. Like, if they could have reneged on the agreement on Monday morning.
But yeah, Jakar came running in. What? Don't do it. Don't do it. You don't know what you're getting into. You can't do this. So then he sleeps on the floor of CNC. And afterwards, he's like, oh, I kind of wish I did that. Look how you are. So kind of the lesson I pulled out of that one was, especially when it comes to things from other cultures, don't be so quick to judge. Maybe take a moment and experience that. I've shared on this podcast before, my wife is Lebanese. Much of her family is Muslim. And when we were first dating, I was invited to her family's Ramadan celebration. And so with Ramadan, you fast from sunup to sundown. After sundown, there's a big feast. There's praying, there's talking, there's celebrating. It's a beautiful celebration. I like to say that I look forward to half of Ramadan each year, that half being the sundown part of it. Right. But I got to go and do that, you know, and I came in, you know, preconceived notions about Muslims and the Islamic faith. And, you know, some were right, a lot were wrong. But in that moment, like, I realized, God, this is a beautiful celebration. And these are great people. And I'm excited to be a part of this family. And I may not join your faith, but I'm sure glad you shared part of it with me.
Yeah.
If I'd come in as Jakar, whoa, no, don't do that. You can't do that. Man, I sure would have missed out on a lot. What else are we missing out on because we come in with our preconceived notions? That's a little lesson I got out of this one.
I'll give it one white star then.
Whoa.
I'll go up for you one. I don't know, a scale of 0 to 5. I'll give you one.
That's a lot more.
It's a good lesson. I won't elaborate anymore, but it's a good lesson. So you should do that. Well, Jeff, so I rated it on white stars, but hopefully you're going to have a much easier time here. Maybe not. I don't know. Of placing this one in our 100% completely accurate, totally immutable, scientifically designed ranking of season 5 of Babylon 5. Our current top 5 is The Very Long Night of Londo Mollari, No Compromises, Learning Curve, A View from the Gallery, and Paragon of Animals. Jeff, where do you put Day of the Dead?
This is a really hard one.
Here's a question. Can I ask a question before you do that?
Yeah.
We've kind of pooped all over this episode a bit.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy the episode at all, though?
I actually really did.
Last week I did not like the episode. But like the rest of season 5, though, like, it's not that I didn't like it. I just didn't like it. Like, I didn't not like it. I just didn't like it. Like, it was an episode. You know what my very first note here was? I feel like we're just watching any 90s television show, sci-fi or not.
Yeah.
I feel like that's where we've gotten back to. It's just any 90s sci-fi show that could ever be out there.
Yeah, I think last week we got an episode we didn't like to watch but enjoyed talking about for a podcast situation. This week, we got we've had a long conversation about that from a podcast, but it's stuff we've pulled out, but I enjoyed watching it. And I think for me, when I look at this
why Byron wasn't in this episode.
It's for real. That alone is going to bump it up a spot. In fact, that statement alone, I was between two.
Okay.
And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, you know, I could rank this based on the assumption that it's a Geometry of Shadows situation, but also I could be wrong. But that statement, it doesn't have Byron in it, answers the question. Brett, this is our new number 5 episode. Wow. Right below A View from the Gallery and above The Paragon of Animals.
Fair enough. I thought you were going to say it was top 3. And I was like, wow, that just goes to show how mediocre season 5 has been so far.
It's so true. Ugh. Well, that's it for the Day of the Dead. Next week, we are watching The Kingdom of the Blind for the first time. We've never seen these episodes. We avoid thumbnails at all costs. We don't read descriptions or anything. We guess what the next episode is going to be based on title alone. Brent, next week, you'll have to pay the piper for what you're about to say. What do you think Kingdom of the Blind is going to be about?
So I think this is where we get back to Byron and the telepaths, though. Right. We can't get too far away from where we left it last week. But I think this one, The Kingdom of the Blind, this is about Byron solidifying and consolidating his power. The Kingdom of the Blind, I think, is a metaphor for the telepaths. They are the blind, and this is about that kingdom. I think this is really about Byron just gathering power, bringing more and more telepaths to the station. I think Lockley, especially, maybe even Sheridan, although Sheridan's probably going to be a little more on the fence, they kind of start regretting allowing them to stay and giving them the leeway that they gave them here. Remember, Sheridan did this because he feels a war coming on with the telepaths from Earth. What if this is the thing that actually starts the war with the telepaths from Earth? Because people from Earth are leaving Earth to come out here to do this. And Psycor is not going to like that. So, Sheridan's going to come face to face. He's not going to be able to have these people on his side. They are going to be the cause of this thing. But it's Byron. This is all Byron. Get ready for a lot of Byron next week, I think.
Sheridan's going to be on the side of Psycor, ultimately.
It wouldn't shock me if Bester was in next week's episode. So... how about you? What do you
think? I'm not far off. I think this will be the first shots fired in the telepath war. Not the start of the telepath war, but in fact, to use that last thing, I wouldn't be surprised if Bester showed up either. Cause what I almost see is Byron as king, right? You know, looking all big and whatever. And I literally see him reciting like a manifesto. Mm. This is the manifesto of the telepaths of my people. It's going to draw those battle lines. And then I think we're going to dive into the telepath war. But that's my prediction. Here's my hope. My hope is that the telepath war lasts about as long as the Minbari Civil War did.
Two episodes, yeah.
Yep, and we move on.
I hope so, because remember when like the telepath thing like was like, this is going to be the story? I'm so done with this part right here. Like either. You know, there's a term we have where I come from. It's time to poop or get off the pot. And it's time for Babylon 5 to poop or get off the pot when it comes to this telepath war thing.
Get it done. We're going to find out what happens right here next week. Thank you everyone so much for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you're watching or listening. Leave us a rating, a review, and please share this podcast with someone who loves Babylon 5 or is just about to fall in love with this incredible series. So Brent, until next time.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, man, what's up?
Why did you say that thing you said before we went on mic?
Oh, because it tells me to.
Well, zitty zoot zoot. Let's get the hell out of here.
Initiating getting the hell out of here maneuver.
We're not some deep space franchise. This station is about something.